Good evening and welcome back to Sports Talk ATL. I am Chase Earl, joined by Alex Sword. We got a lot of good stuff to talk about. We're going to start off with the latest head coaching interviews. Braves radio host from 680 The Fan, Kevin McAlpin, is going to join the show later in the day. We're going to do our NFC and AFC round, divisional round recaps, and we're also going to give our early Super Bowl picks. But as I said, we are going to start off with the latest news surrounding the Falcons and this whole head coaching interview. And there was a lot of news over the weekend. Ben Johnson interviewed. Jim Harbaugh is getting a second interview. Mike Vrabel is going to come in for his first interview. Bobby Slowick interviewed virtually. And I'm sure a lot of these guys will get second interviews. We also had Bill Belichick complete his second interview on Friday. I want to ask you, though, Alex, as much as all this stuff and this wide net is being cast, which is not surprising, how much are you firmly believing in the Falcons being interested in some of these candidates? And how much do you think it is just optics and due diligence and stuff like that?
I want to give them the benefit of the doubt. But from the get-go, even before Arthur Smith was terminated, I mean, all signs pointed to Bill Belichick. Josina Anderson, with that first nugget that an NFC South team was interested in Belichick, then Arthur Smith does get fired before Bill Belichick is even him and the Patriots part ways. People are connecting Atlanta to Belichick, and then the Patriots and Belichick part ways. And everything's just ramped up from there. Over the weekend, Falcons beat writer for ESPN, Michael Rothstein, has a source that says Atlanta's search is wide open. To me, that screams like they're trying to make the PR look a little better than the search is actually wide open. I mean, from the get-go, every single prominent media pundit has said it's Bill Belichick in Atlanta. I don't love the idea. I'm just saying from my perspective, my opinion, it looks like they're just trying to make it look better in the media, PR reasons, that the search is wide open than it actually is, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think these interviews really change much for me. I never thought there was going to be a sit. There's a couple things. One, you can look at it from an optics point of view, right? Like, yes. Optically, they're going to want to make sure they cover all those bases, and whether they really did and whether it was Bill Belichick from the get-go or not, they're going to have these interviews. And the other thing is, why wouldn't you have these interviews? I mean, what? Maybe you're blown away by Ben Johnson coming in there and he just shows you. I mean, maybe he comes in there with a plan, how he's going to utilize these weapons, who he wants as a quarterback, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay, this actually sounds a lot better than Bill Belichick. Or maybe Jim Harbaugh really has interest in coming to Atlanta and he comes in there and says, hey, I want this job. Give me the opportunity. He blows you away. Mike Vrabel, any of these candidates could come in there with a plan and blow you away. So whether you came into this situation 85, 90% sure that Bill Belichick was your guy and you're Arthur Blank and you're enamored with the Patriot way, as we've been led to believe, right? Like, this isn't just one report. This is every single report from reputable media sources, from guys that have sources, from Jonathan Jones to Josina Anderson, from Diana Rossini, everyone has said that he is the favorite. So I don't think these things change my mind in terms of who the favorite is in the clubhouse. But they were always going to have these interviews. And then on top of that, you have the Rooney rule. So they had to have interviews this week. So there was never a time where it was like, oh, Bill Belichick was going to come in for that second interview. He's the guy. They're going to bypass the Rooney rule, face whatever. That was never going to happen.
Yeah, there was some nonsense from insignificant people on social media who suggested that Bill Belichick and the Falcons, a deal between the two sides was imminent. And their definition of imminent may be different than mine, but it sounded like it was going to happen sometime this week. And to your point, the Rooney rule has to be satisfied. The Falcons aren't going to elect to part ways with draft picks or a potential fine. And more so, Arthur Blank and Rich McKay are so concerned about the PR that bypassing the Rooney rule would be a horrible look, and they would absolutely not do that. So though I do believe Belichick is still the front runner, as everybody does, a deal is not imminent. Like you said, I mean, Ben Johnson, Bobby Slowick, they're going to have to get their second in-person interviews. Like you said, like I think the Rothstein sources report of a wide open search, it's just perfect timing, because it started to feel like the Falcons on social media and in the media in general were starting to get a little bit of a pushback of like, you're dead set on Belichick and you haven't even interviewed the hottest candidates of this hiring cycle. So it feels like the timing is just a little peculiar to me at least. I mean, maybe I'm a tinfoil hat guy. I don't know, but it just feels peculiar that like they started to realize like, oh, this isn't a good look. I thought, you know, maybe this would be, we're hiring the greatest coach of all time. I thought, you know, this would land better with the fan base. Instead, the fan base is like, hey, what about all these other candidates? And it's not just the fan base. It's like I said, the media personalities too are like, hey, what about all these other candidates?
Yeah, and to be honest, I hope, and I think we both believe this. And if you're a Falcons fan, even if you like Bill Belichick, because there are Falcons fans out there that are dead set on Bill Belichick, and I understand where they're coming from. I mean, he is the greatest coach of all time. Perhaps, you know, what happened in New England wasn't all of his fault. Maybe Mac Jones isn't a good quarterback, and maybe there were some dynamics that we weren't made aware of. So I understand why some people do want Bill Belichick, and he might very well be the coach. But if you're the Falcons and if you're a fan, you hope this isn't just optics. You hope that they are giving these guys legitimate opportunities to make their case and be blown away and persuaded by whatever they say in those meetings. I'm not sure what the case is. I'm not sure if that is the case. It definitely seems like Arthur Blank really – I mean, listen, he went after Bill Parcells. He got left at the altar. Now he's going hard after Bill Belichick, and everyone's saying he wants Bill Belichick. He wants Bill Belichick. So Bill Belichick want the Falcons? Well, the other part of this is Bill Belichick have a choice, right? Guys, I mean, we don't even know if there is another team interested in Bill Belichick, but we do know to some degree Bill Belichick does have interest, because I think if a team like the Panthers called Bill Belichick, he would just be like, nah, like, I'm not interested. So to some degree, he does have interest. How much interest, we still do not know. I think it's pretty firm, because I think the Falcons are a good landing spot. I think they are one of the best openings. And I think it makes a lot of sense from his perspective, given that maybe he doesn't want to be involved in a circus. The Atlanta media is a lot softer. He's not going to come in and have these expectations to win a Super Bowl year one, even if that's what Arthur Blank expects. we are realistic here. You know, we're just looking to make the postseason for the first time in 6 years. So it just... we'll see what happens. Hopefully it's not all optics, but these interviews were always going to take place.
Yeah, it is hilarious that Falcons fans are like shocked or surprised that like there is other candidates being interviewed. It's like, guys, it was always going to happen. Whether it's real or not is what is up for debate. In my opinion, it feels a little fugazi. You know, the timing of the report is so important to me, where like the Falcons started getting backlash of like, you said you were going to do a thorough process, and now it looks like you're set on Bill Belichick and you're not doing that thorough process. And now it seems like they're trying to just, you know, make amends in the media, you know, throwing Rothstein a bone. Maybe he does have sources. I'm not claiming he doesn't have sources. It just feels like it was a planted story. It was a calculated move, it feels like.
Yeah. Well, we'll see if any of these candidates, they do interview for a second time, you know, make an impact and get a third interview. And we'll see how this thing goes as the week transpires. Coming up after the break, but we're going to discuss Bill Belichick a little bit more and what that potential coaching staff will likely look like.
As the Falcons cast a wide net into the hiring pool, all signs point to Bill Belichick. I think that most people think that's who it's going to end up being, though we're going through the process of second interviews, in-person interviews. This process is not close to being finished, but all eyes, most respected media pundits think it's going to be Bill Belichick. Our own Chase Earl, Mr. Sports Talk ATL himself, has sources very close to the situation who says it's Bill Belichick. I tend to trust the guy. So what does Bill Belichick bring to Atlanta? Because for me, it brings more questions than answers. Where are we going to go at the quarterback? As Matt Ryan said, you know, it looks like it's going to be the veteran around. I tend to agree. He's not going to want to develop a rookie. He's going to be 72 years old. How many seasons does he have left? You know, what's his staff going to look like? How long is he going to be here? What kind of contract is he going to get? All of these questions need to be answered. And one of them might have already been answered. Over the weekend, Ian Rappaport kind of reported that basically it's kind of expected that if Bill Belichick comes to Atlanta, he's going to bring old friend Josh McDaniels with him. Chase, thoughts?
I mean, listen, Josh McDaniels, terrible head coach. I think we know that. Definitely a prickly personality. You know, it's not a guy that would be eager to have a beer with or anything like that. But let's call a spade a spade. I mean, when it comes to, you know, being an offensive coordinator, he has a fantastic track record. I mean, obviously what he did with Brady, you could say, oh, that's all Brady. But even what he did with Mac Jones in his first season, I mean, Mac Jones was a Pro Bowler with Josh McDaniels, and he hasn't been the same since. So from an offensive coordinator perspective, I know a lot of people might be like, oh, we don't want all of Bill's old coaches. Well, maybe that's true about Matt Patricia, and maybe that's true about Joe Judge, and maybe you don't like those guys. And I get getting the gang back together is not exactly the sexiest thing. But if there was one guy I have no problem with coming back and being the OC, it would be Josh McDaniels.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it is hilarious. We're getting the gang back together in Atlanta. Gosh, this feels weird. It feels like a Sonny with a Chance or Curb Your Enthusiasm skit where it's like, let's just make fun of Falcons fans. 28-3, ha ha, let's get the gang back together and actually bring them a Super Bowl. But listen, I tend to agree with you. And though I'm not as, you know, open to the idea of Bill Belichick, I think people are confusing who Josh McDaniels really is. I mean, I'm going to read some stats to you. In 13 seasons in New England, he coordinated 12 top 10 offenses. And the one that he didn't, it was with Cam Newton in 2020. And, you know, Cam Newton at that point was kind of a shell of himself. Now, granted, to your point, Tom Brady was under center. But Mac Jones in his rookie year looked like he, and people were dubbing him the next Tom Brady. And I think a lot of that now in hindsight was due to McDaniels. I mean, we saw Bill Belichick, senile old Bill Belichick, try and put Matt Patricia in charge of the offense. And you saw how that went. Mac Jones's career, you know, took a tumble without Josh McDaniels. And I think that, you know, the whole idea that Josh McDaniels is just this bad guy is really irrelevant to the fact of, can he coordinate a good offense? Can he take advantage of Kyle Pitts, Bijan Robinson, and Drake London? Those are the answers I care about. I don't care about him as a person. Like you said, I'm not getting a beer with the guy. I care about how many points he can put up on Sunday. Now, if you don't think he can do that in Atlanta, then we can have a conversation. But the whole he's a bad guy thing, you know, miss me with that. I don't need that.
Yeah. I mean, the days of me caring, they actually never existed of who's a good guy and who's not when it comes to my sports. I do not care if you're doing filling.
I want to win.
I just want wins. I want W's. We haven't been to the playoffs in 6 years. I want wins. And I think McDaniels can help bring that if he is indeed brought along with Bill Belichick as he's hired as the next head coach. Coming up after the break, Kevin McAlpin joins the show to talk about the Braves' offseason moves. Joining us now on Sports Talk ATL, a very special guest for Braves fans. You get to hear him over 100 times a year before and after Atlanta Braves games on 680 The Fan. Kevin McAlpin, thanks so much for joining us.
Gentlemen, thanks for having me. And it doesn't feel like baseball weather, but what are we, about a month from pitchers and catchers? Doesn't feel like it outside, but it's right around the corner.
No, it's been crazy. The weather's been crazy. I think it was like colder here than it was in Buffalo yesterday. So, the Braves offseason, I thought Alex Anthopoulos has maneuvered brilliantly. I mean, there hasn't been a ton of splashes, but there's been a lot of savvy moves to not only get the team ready for 2024, but keep his options in 2025 and beyond. What are your opinions so far of the Atlanta Braves offseason?
Well, I like what they've done. I mean, look, it's two names. We joked about it, you know, at the end of the season. Hey, you're going to have this laundry list of names of here's all the guys that the fans think and we all in the media might think they could target. And out of left field, no pun intended, here comes Jared Kelnick and here comes Chris Sale, who nobody envisioned being part of this thing coming into this year. So I think Alex has done a really nice job. Look, the one thing you cannot have too much of is starting pitching. We've seen that in the playoffs the last couple of years. Heck, I've done the post-game show, guys, where there are nights where Ben will toss it to me in the booth and go, listen to Kevin to find out who's starting tomorrow because we have no idea. That's a tough place to be in, especially when you're talking about a pennant race and going into October baseball. So I like the Chris Sale deal. I think he's got a chip on his shoulder. I think he's got a little bit of something to prove. Heck, he said that during his Zoom conference call. You know, he kind of wanted to see it through in Boston because he felt like there was some unfinished business there. If it wasn't going to be there, but, you know, Atlanta is a really good alternative for him. It's not far from where he makes his home in Florida. Veteran guy. He's been there. He's done that. Snit calls it all the time. He brings instant credibility to that clubhouse. And I think that the young guys can gravitate towards a guy like Sale. So you start thinking Freed, perennial Cy Young contender. Strider, same conversation. You throw Sale in there, who's been a top 10 finisher how many times in his career? Charlie Morton's my four, and I can get a combination of Bryce Elder, whoever it might be, Alan Winans, Darius Vine, Smith Shauver, Hurston Waldrop, as all competing and being part of this thing. I love it. And then for Jared Kelnick, look, he's still just 24 years old, change of scenery, you know, a highly regarded prospect. you know, the Mets gave up on him pretty quick. And I think, you know, now coming to a team that's a World Series contender, I think there's a lot of excitement for him as well. So I like what they've done. The bullpen solidified. Love how they've been able to shorten games. I think what he has done this offseason, while he hasn't landed the big fish, we all know that. I think that what he showed you a couple trade deadlines ago, adding those ancillary pieces along the way, helped him win a World Series. And I think he's put this team in really good position once again for 2024 and beyond.
Yeah, some people, you know, were of the opinion wholesale changes were needed. You get bounced in the same fashion, back-to-back postseason by the Phillies. We hate those guys. Some overreacted in the moment, emotional. We had wholesale changes. Obviously, cooler heads prevailed. Those are the ones who are in charge, unlike us fans. And I think it was perfect. Alex Anthopoulos, obviously, to your guys' point, what he said, he did make moves for 2024 and beyond with Kelenic. But I think the most important thing was building the roster for October. Winning in the regular season, winning the NL East is no longer the goal. I mean, that's kind of like a just check in the box. It's what we do. Our sights are set higher than the NL East. And I think, in my opinion, it was the bullpen. He has overkilled the bullpen. When you get a guy like Ronaldo Lopez who can go multiple innings, you got Aaron Bummer, high upside guy. You bring back two guys in Pierce Johnson and Joe Jimenez. I mean, to go along with AJ Minter and Rossiel Iglesias, I mean, that's six elite guys. High leverage guys that have no issue in high leverage situations. To me, that was what I was most happy about. Anthopoulos just overkilled the bullpen. And you still got a couple of guys like not lottery tickets, but, you know, Tyler Matzek's back, Dylan Lee's back. I mean, that is an embarrassment of riches for Brian Snicker.
Yeah, it really is. And look, when you talk about a Chris Sale, am I going to push him to go seven innings, eight innings in the first 2 months of the year? I'm not when I have that kind of bullpen, I'm not. I think the ability to not ease him in, but just make sure, like to your point, Alex, you need him in October. It'd be great to win games in June, July, and August, but my priority when it comes to a guy like that is helping me win when the lights are the brightest. He's been there. He's done it. He knows what to expect. He's been a big game pitcher. So, yeah, I mean, look, the bullpen, and I'm glad you brought up Lopez because, you know, there was some talk when he came over, will he compete for a job in the rotation? I never liked that. I like just leave him alone. Leave him in the bullpen. He's been highly effective. I know he's been a starter throughout his career, but I like just having him in that pen when I have option after option. And Snit, I've heard him say it a million times, you know, ideally there's a spot where Iggy closes two out of three nights and he's down and I can go with Lopez. I can go with Minter. I can go with whoever it might be. I can mix and match. And in a world where, you know, you have this three batter minimum, you better be able to have your lefties get righties out and vice versa. They also have that as well. They got a lot of guys with reverse splits. So I think there's a lot to like. That bullpen's been good. This might be the best we've seen in a long, long time.
I think keeping the entire pitching staff fresh for the entire season and going into October is such an underrated aspect of good teams and stuff like that. But I want to stick on this Chris Sale thing because I've been on this show for weeks since this thing happened, talking about how much I love this move and how good this guy is. And I just want you to speak on that because maybe they don't believe me, but this Chris Sale guy, I mean, we're talking about a guy, seven straight All-Stars, seven straight finishes inside the top six of the AL Cy Young race, the highest K9 rate of any pitcher in MLB history. I mean, the guy is an absolute stud. And even though he hasn't pitched like that for 3-4 years, there's no doubt that the stuff is still there. And the Braves are confident in his health. Talk about what the Braves are really getting. If this guy can stay healthy, like we're not getting, I know people laugh and he made a joke about being the fourth starter and stuff like that. And the third, we're talking about a true all-star here, even at the age of 34, 35, whatever he is, as long as he can stay healthy. And as you said, being able to, you know, ease them into this with all the offense and the stars and the pitching depth that they have. I think that's so critical because having a guy like that in October, if he's healthy, I don't think Braves fans are quite sure because he's been in the AL, probably haven't seen him a ton, how good this guy is.
Well, what you've probably seen is him on the injured list time and time again. That's probably what first thing comes to mind is, well, this guy can't stay on the field. And it's one of the first things he talked about in his press conference on Zoom was that this has been a normal offseason. He's been able to do everything he wants to. He's at a spot right now that he hasn't been in the last few years. I think what you're getting is a guy with, like I said, a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, a little bit of something to prove. And I had Brian Snitker on my show a couple weeks ago, and he said, look, this guy's just 34 years old. Let's not write him off as a 40-year-old. Like, this guy's still got some years to go. So while he did come up young and while he has had a lot of years and a lot of wear and tear on that arm, 34. I mean, this is not a guy that they're signing to a two-year deal at 40 years old. And think about the price of starting pitching. I mean, you look at a Sonny Gray. He was a guy I talked about. I'd love to see Sonny Gray here in Atlanta. Do I want him for 3 years and $75 million? No. Some of the other guys, Tyler Glass now with the Dodgers. He hasn't thrown more than, 122 innings in a season? And they gave him, 4 or 5 years? I guess what I'm getting at is when you look at the overall landscape of starting pitching, heck, you're giving Charlie Morton $20 million this year as a 40-year-old. 2 years and $38 million guaranteed for Chris Sale? I feel pretty good about that. And like I said, I think that one thing you have heard from Alex Anthopoulos time and time and time again is that word upside, right? He always looks at these guys that feel like there's still more in the tank. There's still more to prove. Now, look, could this be a colossal failure? Could this blow up in their face? Could this be another Cole Hamels? Sure. Nothing's guaranteed. We know that. But I think that when you talk about where he is health-wise, he feels like he's in a good spot. Hearing that from him and knowing he's already putting in the work in Northport and starting to be around his new teammates shows he's hungry as well. And I think when you get a guy at this point in his career that has won, knows what it feels like to win and wants to get another one, I think that there's a lot to love about this deal.
Yeah, I think fans are conflating the difference between what the Braves are actually risking. There's not that much risk involved with Chris Sale. Yes, we gave up Von Gershom. He was an extremely promising trade chip. But the fact is there was no immediate point for him to prove himself on the field. Ozzie Albies isn't going anywhere. He struggled at shortstop. We got Kelenic. When the Kelenic trade went through, the writing was on the wall. And the fact of the matter is you're giving a guy $38 million. It's really not that much of a risk when you talked about some of the guys. The starting pitcher market is absolutely insane. And for Alex Anthopoulos, you traded Von Grissom, who's going to go and immediately start with Boston. We all wish him the best. We all think he's going to be a good pro. But you get a guy in Chris Sale that fills an immediate need from now and the future. I think that fans who are talking about all this risk, there's not that much risk from where I sit. There really isn't.
Well, and I'll add on to that because your risk now becomes, okay, Max Fried's going into a walk year. What's going to happen with his future? Charlie Morton, will this be it? You need somebody to put along with Spencer Strider and some of these young guys when you start looking at 2025 and beyond. You've got to have a plan for, okay, what am I going to do if I lose two of my five starters going into next season? So, yeah, again, I think there's a lot to like about it. And when you look at the market, if you were going to add a guy at the caliber of a Chris Sale, if he's coming off a healthy year, which when he was healthy, like you mentioned, his swing and miss stuff was great. And think about this. I'll also add into my last question, Chase, you asked what you're getting in a guy like Sale. Think about what has been the Braves' downfall the last 2 years, the Phillies in the playoffs. Well, I'm getting a lefty to go up against Kyle Schwarber, Bryce Harper. I'm forgetting somebody else in that lineup, but think about some of the lefty bats in the National League, Freddie Freeman. You know, you look at Max Muncy, the Dodgers, like Shohei Ohtani, like you're getting some big time left-handed power that he's going to go up against. I like it. I like a guy that still has a lot of swing and miss when you know that there are some really dangerous left-handed bats, not only in the East, but in the National League just as a whole.
Yeah, I actually mentioned that earlier in the offseason when talking about how the Braves really are looking towards the postseason, because as we said, that's really what's most important. When you look at the National League, you know, they went after left-handed arms. They really bolstered their left-handed arms in the bullpen, because last year, when you look at Matzik and Lee being down, they had Brad Hand as their second lefty. And you know, Brian Snicker likes to say, if you only have one lefty, you basically have none or something like that. And that's the truth. I mean, AJ Minter was really the only reliable lefty that they had. And I think they went out and made that a point of the offseason because, like we talked about, that's what's going to be required in the postseason. Last question I have for you, Kevin. The offseason, you know, it feels like it's probably coming to an end. I'm sure there'll be some minor tweaks. But with Alex Anthopoulos, you never know. Maybe this is the time where the blue box comes up. And I know we just had one about his extension, but maybe this is where they extend another one of those Braves. Do you see any other maybe last second deals, maybe a platoon option over there with Jared Kelenic in left field, maybe an extension for Max Fried? I know that's everyone wants to talk about it. AJ Minter's another guy that makes a lot of sense. Do you see anything like that happening before the start of the season?
Well, I could see a right-handed bat in the outfield. I don't think I'm breaking any news with that one. I mean, I think you need to find somebody else that you can put out there should one of those guys need a breather if an injury happens. We know something's going to happen when you play 162. I would love to see Kevin Pillar back. I really would. Now, it's going to cost you a little more than it did this time last year when you brought him in on a minor league deal. But I thought he was such a good fit in the clubhouse and for a team that really puts a ton of emphasis on that chemistry off the field. I would love to see a guy like Pillar come back. I think he'd be a great addition. You need to probably find one or two more just infielders, round out your bench a little bit, but that's so easy. I'm not saying it's easy. It's easier than if you're trying to add a starter or try to add some. Your everyday lineup's in good shape. You're not mixing and matching a whole lot there. I feel like Kelnick's probably going to be your everyday outfielder, even though there's been some talk about a platoon. That could still happen. But I think, you know, one or two more infielders. I like Guillorme. I like the former team card. I would love to mess with some Mets fans this summer if he comes back and bites him in the rear a couple times. We will have a good time with that. But, no, I think that just rounding out the bench, to me, for a team that doesn't use their bench a whole lot, you need to find a couple extra guys to stash away there. But, again, I don't think there's a whole lot left to do. You know, I don't see the Fried thing happening. I think we're in a similar situation with Freddie Freeman and Dansby Swanson where it's going to play itself out. And, look, if I'm Max, I've earned the right to test those waters. Why not? I've been one of the best lefties in the game for the last 4 or 5 years. It's not a knock. It's big business. They all know that. They get it. So I don't think a Fried extension happens as much as you guys are shaking your head. You're bummed to hear that. And your fans.
I mean, I agree.
I agree. People who think are still holding out hope, they need to wrap their heads around it. It's the writing's on the wall.
Yeah. And then look, again, is he going to get $200 million? Maybe. He's got to prove he can stay healthy. And I love Max. And I go back to the first spring I watched Max, you know, at Disney World on those backfields throwing that curveball and to watch his progression to become the bulldog that he has been. You know, I would love to see it happen. I don't think that's going to happen. So I think to answer your question the long way, it's probably just one or two smaller ancillary pieces. But look, again, go back to, you know, a couple of years ago, those ancillary pieces are why you won a World Series.
Yeah, I know I said last question, but I do want to ask this last thing about Max Fried because you did mention his health. Is there any worry? Because the elbow thing last year kind of never really got explained. You know, he didn't have to go through Tommy John. There was no UCL damage. Obviously, he's had other injuries, but blister things, that's a little different. The elbow is something that could really worry fans and could be a problem down the line. And maybe that's why they really went after a guy like Chris Sale to bolster that rotation. Is that anything that you have an eye on coming into this season?
Honestly, no. To me, it's the blisters more than anything. This has been something that's troubled him since like 2018. I remember a start in Milwaukee he came out of. We talked to him afterwards. He showed us the finger, and he felt like they had him on a good plan to keep it dry and to make sure that moisture doesn't build up. It's easier said than done. Some people are just prone to those kinds of things. And, you know, he sort of joked about it. He's tried just about everything. And I say just about everything. If you need to have any further idea, just Google, you know, how to prevent pitchers preventing blisters. It's pretty disgusting. And I don't know that I would try that method, but I digress. But no, I don't think the elbow, the shoulder, that can be an issue for any starter, any pitcher at any point. You're one pitch away from never throwing again in the big leagues. So no, I don't worry about that. I just worry about a guy who's, look, he's getting closer to 30, right? And we talk about 30. You know, some guys, that's when they hit their peak. See Charlie Morton. Some guys start to regress a little bit. So I'm not worried about that. To me, I need to keep those fingers without any humidity and moisture on them. Make sure he's able to give me 32, 33 starts this year.
Yeah, I completely agree. Really excited about the Braves in 2024. Kevin, I am so thankful that you could join us. Thanks a bunch.
You got it, guys. Sorry, I'm drinking my coffee. You got it, guys. Thank you.
You're all good. You're all good. The divisional round just wrapped up in the NFC. Hey, we got, and the AFC, obviously. And we got all our picks right. Maybe not all the vibes of the game correct, but we did get all of our picks right. All four teams that we said were going to advance did advance. And the AFC, the 49ers, clawed their way out against a Packers team. Alex, I know you did not see that coming, but let me ask you real quick. I mean, should we be worried about the 49ers? Because as good as they look for like an 8-week stretch, they are not playing their best football down the stretch.
I think, yeah, it's maybe officially time to worry because the Packers defense is terrible, guys. And I know, you know, if the 49ers offense does have some injuries, they struggled. I don't care about all that. This is pathetic what they did because the Packers, I know they showed out against the Cowboys, but that's not who Joe Barry's defense is, I promise you. So I am getting a little bit concerned about San Fran and those Lions. I think that they should be taken more seriously than they are. Touchdown underdog.
I'll give them a little bit of the pass because of the weather, but I agree with you. I mean, Brock Purdy is not him. I know he delivered in the fourth quarter on that final drive, but overall, he did not look great. Jordan Love really pissed that game away. I mean, he was fantastic for 2.5 quarters and then started throwing, looked like Desmond Ritter. I tweeted out I literally tweeted out, wow, people thought Jordan Love was Desmond Ridder. And then guess what Jordan Love does? Goes and turns into Desmond Ridder. Yeah. Not seconds after I tweeted that out. He throws a pick. He obviously threw a terrible pick to end the game when they had a chance to tie it. But shout out to that Green Bay kicker. I mean, I do not know how that guy's still in the NFL.
How about Anders Carlson? That guy had a terrible track record in college and then got drafted, and now he's still not good. I don't know how that guy has
There was a moment where Matt LaFleur, there was a report on him and how he feels confident about that kicker. It was literally right after he missed the kick, and he said, I just hope and pray because I have no confidence.
Oh, my God.
Which is just absurd. But I think this weekend's more about the Lions, man. I really do. I thought they looked great. I thought Baker looked great. I thought the Bucs, they represented the NFC South well. They definitely deserved to be there over any of the other teams. I thought they had a real chance to win that game. Baker played great. He definitely deserved to be a starter in this league. And you could argue that he's a top 15 starter in this league, I think, after the way he performed, especially in the playoffs. But I think this is more about the Lions. I think that Ben Johnson offense, Sam LaPorta is a freak. Amon-Ra St. Brown is incredible, easily a top 10 receiver in this game. And he's got that offense clicking. I do worry about their pass defense a little bit, but their run defense, I think, could make things difficult for the 49ers. You're talking about a team that everything goes off the run in that offense. That's how all Kyle Shanahan's offenses have been. And the Lions have a defensive front, a front seven that could really make some problems for the 49ers offense, I believe.
Yeah, I know. I think you're spot on. And I think that, you know, it's great to see the Lions. 1991, last time they were in a conference championship game. I mean, that's absolutely bonkers. I love it for their fans. Clearly they still have fans. That place, Ford Field, was absolutely rocking. The most expensive divisional round ticket in NFL history by average price. I mean, those fans are going to be traveling to San Francisco. It might look like a Detroit home game if 49ers fans don't show out. I love it for them. I hope they can get over this last real hurdle and return to the Super Bowl, because they deserve it. That fan base deserves it. And when Ben Johnson leaves, I'm not quite sure how many times they'll have this opportunity.
I mean, even getting to the Super Bowl for the Lions would be incredible. I mean, that 2-week lead up, everything would be awesome. I really hope that is what we get to see. Coming up after the break, we are going to move to the AFC, where we have a epic matchup for the AFC Championship. We nailed the AFC divisional round spot on. We said you can't doubt Patrick Mahomes. And, of course, we said that was the biggest and the best game of the weekend, and it delivered. You know, Sunday night, I mean, these Bills-Chiefs matchups, they need to be national televised for until the end of time. Every time that those two teams face, they need to be nationally televised, because I swear to God, they come down to the last play of the game. Josh Allen, once again, man, you got to feel for Bills fans. I mean, as much as – and from Falcons fans who have never won a Super Bowl and who felt like they've had moments in their grasp, the only fan base I can really empathize with that's almost had it worse than us is Buffalo. Obviously, they went to 4 straight Super Bowls.
Yeah, I'd say that's worse.
Couldn't win one. And now I know they're not making it to the AFC Championship game, but it feels like they're right there. I mean, I thought the Bills very easily could have been viewed as the favorites to win the Super Bowl. Them, the Ravens, and the Niners were the three teams I thought were above the rest. But as long as you have Patrick Mahomes, man, and I know it was his first road playoff game, and that was all the talk leading up into this game. But I mean, just I was really left at that game, and I was just in awe. I mean, 5 incompletions, freezing cold weather, doesn't really have great wide receivers, and he just delivers every single time. I mean, it truly is amazing.
Yeah, 6 playoff appearances, 6 straight AFC title games. I mean, he is well on his way to being regarded as the greatest football player of all time. Anybody who still doubts him, I don't know what to do. You're just coming from a place of jealousy, I guess, because he is right now. He's the best player in football. I don't care who he's throwing to. I'm never going to bet against him. I might not bet for him. I did last night. I'm never going to bet against that guy, especially with Andy Reid. And I know we always say he doesn't have the greatest wide receivers, but guys, he's still got a first ballot future Hall of Famer and Travis Kelce. I mean, we can't forget about that guy. He had an incredible day. It's really just special to watch those games. Those two guys go back and forth. We really are spoiled. I mean, this is the Peyton Manning, Tom Brady back and forth that everybody's, you know, we grew up watching, and now we have it, you know, kind of the encore, and Joe Burrow's in there too. So I just feel lucky to be able to watch it. And I do want to say one thing. I do feel bad for Bills fans, and I do think they have it worse, because though Falcons fans could sniff it, they tasted a Super Bowl. Four straight losses, I think, trumps one 25-point deficit. But anybody blaming Josh Allen for that loss doesn't know football. Don't let them talk to you. You don't need that negativity in your life. The Bills did not lose that football game because of Josh Allen. I don't even care about the second and third down kind of miscues he had. They did not lose because of Josh Allen.
Yeah, and shout out to Sean McDermott doing the Damar Hamlin, like trying to make a Hollywood script.
You want
to
blame somebody, blame that guy.
That was one of the craziest things I've ever seen. I mean, it was almost like, you talk about a Curb Your Enthusiasm skit.
Is this a joke?
That is what that was. Luckily, the Chiefs fumbled, or like they wouldn't even have had a chance to win that game, because that should have cost them any chance that they had in that game. But let's move to the other side. All this talk about Lamar Jackson, all this talk about C.J. Stroud, everybody was on the Texans. We said the Ravens were going to smoke them. They went out there and delivered. I want to give credit to Lamar Jackson, because I think he answered a lot of the questions that everybody had of him. He deserves a ton of credit. He looks legit. The Ravens look like a juggernaut. I know the Chiefs, we said we're never going to bet against Patrick Mahomes, but the Ravens look like a team that could very easily make life a living hell. And a big reason for that is that Ravens defense, led by Mike McDonald, who is a Falcons head coaching candidate. That is a special bunch on that side of the ball.
Yeah, I was going to go in the same direction. We didn't even talk about it. Like minds, you know, we're great. Mike McDonald is for real. This guy should be regarded as one of the top head coaching candidates in this cycle. I'm talking with the Bobby Slowick, with the Ben Johnsons, these bright young offensive minds. Guess who's put these bright offensive minds in a blender? Mike McDonald on that Ravens defense. And I get Baltimore's got, you know, studs all over the field, but they didn't have Marlon Humphrey for that game. They didn't have a couple other guys. So it's not necessarily like you put a couple of pieces together on that Falcons defense, and we could be looking at something really special if Mike McDonald's coordinating it. I think that he should be held in the highest regard in terms of these head coaching candidates. And he proved it against Bobby Slowick, who is regarded as this great Shanahan disciple offensive mind. I think, you know, people should be open to the idea of Mike McDonald.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any question. I think he's automatically going to – I think he's going to get a head coaching job just based off his performance. I would be shocked if he didn't. Coming up after the break, we're going to go ahead and give our way too early Super Bowl picks based off what we've seen so far. The NFC and AFC championships are set. We got the Lions and the 49ers and the Ravens and the Chiefs. The top two, I guess the Chiefs are the three seed, but no one's surprised if the Chiefs are there. The top
one versus three, both one versus three,
one versus two. Is anybody? I'm just gonna ask it this way, because I think they've been clear cut the most impressive team since the end of the season and into the divisional round. Is anybody going to be able to stop the Baltimore Ravens?
It doesn't look like it. And if you were a betting man, which I am, I think I'm hard pressed. Like I just said, it's hard to bet against Patrick Mahomes. But this Ravens team, I said it at the beginning of the postseason that this is the best Ravens team Lamar Jackson has had. And Lamar Jackson is playing like he is going to be crowned MVP for the second time. I don't know how you bet against the Ravens. Patrick Mahomes is on the other side. And quite frankly, I think that whoever comes out of the AFC, Chiefs or Ravens, are going to, you know, handle business, whoever comes out of the NFC in terms of the 49ers and Lions. I tend to think it'll be the 49ers, but I wouldn't write off the Lions. I really would not.
What is the line on that Ravens game? 3.5?
Yeah.
3.5. That's how you know I'm a gambling man. Didn't even need to see it. That's just what it smelled.
You got a touchdown. You got a touchdown in San Francisco, and you got about a field goal in Baltimore.
That's way too many points, in my opinion, for the Lions. I just don't think the 49ers have looked that impressive. And I think the Lions are, you know, they're playing with house money at this point. They impress their fans. Now they go into San Francisco and play a team that isn't playing their best football. And I don't really trust Brock Purdy that much.
Frankly, I do not.
I really just don't trust him. And even if the 49ers do win that game, I mean, you talked about whoever wins the AFC championship being the heavy favorite over the NFC. I think that's most likely the case either way. And obviously Vegas sees the 49ers as a significantly better team than the Lions, even if we don't necessarily see that way. But if it's Brock Purdy versus Patrick Mahomes or Brock Purdy versus Lamar Jackson, I mean, that game to me is not going to be a close one.
No, you can. Yeah, I was going to say, just bet on the best quarterback this weekend who you think, and you'll probably end up all right. Like, you could just bet on Jared Goff or bet on Patrick Mahomes, or if you think Lamar Jackson is playing better ball than Patrick Mahomes, I don't agree, but I, you know, you could get an argument out of that. I think you'd be just fine. I think it's the Ravens Super Bowl to lose, though. I really do think that they're playing the best ball, most complimentary football team left right now by far.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Ravens have the best defense. You could argue they have the best offense, and I think far and away they have the best coaching staff from top to bottom. When you talk about DC, OC, head coach, Anthony Weaver, I mean, a guy that's interviewed for the Falcons. But yeah, I think it's the Ravens Super Bowl to lose as well. That wraps up our show for this evening. Thank you guys for joining us. We will be back with you tomorrow.